You're listening to lgradio.online. I'm Leo Green. Welcome to In Conversation with Van Morrison.
I'm hungry for your love. I'm hungry for your love. I'm hungry for your love, but I can wait now. I'm on the telephone, and give it to you.
As you've explained to us during the course of these conversations, many of your recordings over the years you produced yourself, originally, just as you explained to us, as a necessity to get paid. But I'd love to ask you, do you think that the role of a producer is a highly necessary part of the recording process, for you at least?
I don't know. It's just, I think for some people it is. See, I don't really need a producer. I need... you know, do the stuff I don't want to do. You know what I mean? Like mixing. So I would have a producer for mixing. To me, mixing is the most boring thing. Like since 8-track, you know, since 8-track, it's just been boring. I just don't get it at all. Except it's just more machines, more money, take longer, right? Charge more. So, I mean, no, it's just, I only need a producer for that because to me, that's the most boring thing I could imagine is mixing. You know what I mean? But it's not spontaneous. It's just boring, boring, boring. And if somebody wants to do that, go ahead, be my guest, you know? Other than that, I don't need a producer, you know?
Yeah, sure.
There are no producers like what I would want anyway, right? Because if I wanted a producer, it would be somebody like Bert Burns or Jerry Wexler. Who actually were producers. They were involved in the thing out in the room, making suggestions, saying, you know, what about this idea? They were more like producer arrangers because they were involved in the arrangement of the music also, right? So it wasn't just somebody like going like, tick one, tick two, you know, they actually were involved in the whole thing, right? And they would get arrangers, you know what I mean? They would bring arrangers in because, like, especially Bert Burns, because he was like writing songs all the time. So, I mean, this guy was in the studio every day. You know, making the thing happen. That's a producer. No, those guys don't exist. If they do, I'm not hearing about them, but none on that level. Also, we've got more about the equipment and people playing to sync tracks and whatever the hell that's supposed to be, you know? And to me, it's like the soul's been taken out of it. You know what I mean? The soul has just been sucked out of it. It's like, it's about the equipment. I mean, you know, yeah, some of the best stuff was done on like 4-track, for God's sake. I mean, That's been proven.
Every long time to ever you again.
It's interesting talking about arrangers and arrangements. How do you feel about the arrangements over the years? I do note, and the reason I ask is because I notice with a lot of your recordings as the years gone by, you seem to have used arrangers less and less. Is that fair to say?
It's not because I didn't want to have arrangers. No, nobody was putting it forth. I mean, even when I was living in London in the 90s, I was asking people about arrangers and nobody came up with anything. I mean, I had a string arranger when I was there, you know, worked on some albums, but no, I was always on the lookout for arrangers, but nobody was putting anything through. I love arrangers, I love them. I mean, I was always looking for arrangers, but no one was coming up with anything for me, so. I mean, even record companies come up with, you know, they come up with nothing. I mean, there probably were people in America, but nobody was putting anybody forward, you know? But I mean, that's what was missing most of the time was that. Really? But I guess maybe again, they were just lazy and they just want to leave it up to me. I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's weird that, I mean, when I re-signed with Blue Note, I was asking them about arrangers and it didn't come up. Well, they came up with somebody that wasn't really an arranger, you know, really. Right. But I mean, there are people out there. I know there are. They just didn't try. They just weren't trying. I don't really like listening to, you know, some of the stuff I've done because I always think, oh, that was never thought out, you know, some of the stuff. I think, I didn't really get a chance to work that song and think it through and think about possibly giving it to, you know, different arrangers, see what they come up with. I think that's been a missing factor there that you, I mean, you pointed out, that's been a missing factor. Not through choice, but just because nobody was coming up with anybody. That was a disappointing thing with Blue Note. And, you know I'm not going to be, you know, flavor of the month with them, but it's one of the disappointing things that they never, twice, they never come up with anything. Because when they first came to me, Bruce Lundvall, back in the old days when Bruce Lundvall, he said, oh, what about like a big band album? I said, yeah, fine, let's do a big band album. And like, okay, why don't you get somebody, why don't you get Quincy, why don't you get blah, blah, blah. And they didn't come up with anything, you know? And the same thing happened again when I re-signed with them again a couple of years ago. They didn't come up with anything. You think for a jazz label who's presenting themselves as they have this pedigree and, you know, this guy's running it and everything is wonderful and all that, and they can't come up with anything for me? I'm sorry, but I don't get it. And I'm not going to be flavor of the month, but I don't care because I'm really disappointed that they didn't come up with something for me, you know? Really disappointed. Twice. I was like, that's twice. Blue Note is a fantastic legacy and label, and they, you know, and I'm sure they've got, it's just laziness, I just think. It's just laziness. I'd love to do projects like that. I mean, for me, that's really exciting. And, you know, working with different people, and like you say, possibly arrangers or whatever, yeah, great. I mean, bring it on. But, you know, I can't do it all on my own. You know what I mean?
Sure, understood. People are always, you know, mention to me in your music that obviously it's drenched in horn sections, right? But also there is a massive presence, and I don't think people necessarily recognize this, but there's a massive presence in so many of your songs of string arrangements.
I don't like a lot of arrangements for the sake of arrangements. I like, very basic, simple things that more like padding. I like strings to be minimalistic, man. I like a lot of cello, which a lot of arrangers don't. Well, they turn the cello down in the mix. I say, I want more of that. Oh, you do? Well, let's put a little bit. No, I said, I don't mean a little bit. I mean, I want more. I remember having, to force people to turn up the cellos because it's too much. So I don't like it. All violins and viola on top. I want the cellos brought up so to balance that. And it seems like that's, they didn't really get that part. I don't know why. If you're going to have cellos, let's hear them. Because you get all this top end stuff and you go like, oh, this sounds like Mantovani,
Just talking about this now, the track that comes to mind, of course, for me, is Coney Island.
Well, that's why, that's minimalistic.
Going back from Downpatrick, stopping off at St. John's Point. Out all day bird watching and the crack was good. Stopped off at Strangford Lock early in the morning. Drove through Shigley, taking pictures and on to Killalay. Stopping for Sunday papers at the Lacal District. Just before Coney Island. On and on over the hill to Artglass in the Jam Jar. Autumn sunshine, magnificent and all shining through. Stop off at Artglass for a couple of jars of mussels and some potted herrings in case we get famished before dinner. On and on, over the hill and the crack is good. Heading towards Coney Island. I look at the side of your face. As the sunlight comes streaming through the window in the autumn sunshine. And all in all time, while going to Coney Island, I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great if it was like this all the time?
Why indeed, hear, hear. You know, Van, whenever we talk about music or gigs or songwriting, it always seems with you that most roads lead back to the blues, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, that's kind of where I live, and that's, always comes back to that, The blues are what I do. That's really what I want to do. More than anything else, that's where I am, That's kind of where I live, kind of thing, Spiritually,
Sure. And you're one of the few guys around now who actually got to work with your influences. When and how did you first come across guys like John Lee Hooker?
In London, and the Island Hotel was A-A-L-A-N-D in Bloomsbury, and there was all these blues guys were, staying there. It was kind of like, wow, what the hell, serendipity, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
So he was staying there, and I just got to know him, and I got to know Little Walter as well. He was staying there for a while. Those were the two main guys that were staying there, were Little Walter and John Lee. And there was a lot of other musicians, bands coming in and out. And I just kept, then I went to the States and met him again and re-met him in Boston. So, and then when I moved to California, the area I didn't know, but the area I moved to in California, he was local to that. Which was, again, serendipity. So, I was down recording with him since the 70s, Yeah, I could probably compile a whole album of stuff right from the 70s right through with him. Duets on mainly his albums, mainly from the 70s on, Yeah.
Never. Come out of these blues alive.
All you want.
If I live to be 100,
but Van Morrison,
I don't think I ever will.
Fantastic. fantastic just listening to you there with John Lee Hooker. I mean, meeting guys like Hooker at such a young age must have had such a huge impact on you. How old were you when you met him for the first time?
18. But he used to have rehearsals in the lounge, and we used to play with him when he had rehearsals, you know, because he'd be working on stuff. And, you know, while he didn't like hanging around, so he'd come down and, you know, say, you know, I want to run this. And he just, you know, it was a workshop, like a workshop, you know. Never mind. I mean, that's again serendipity. I mean, whatever you think. Yeah, I never thought, you know, years earlier than when I was listening to Little Walter, I'd even like meet him, or, you know, never mind get to play with him. So, but there's others as well. I mean, you know, there's Clapton. I mean, Clapton has worked with a lot of people. You know, when he was in the Yardbirds, for instance, and there's other guys. There's not many. That's true. No, I guess...
Yeah, there weren't really many of you that got the chance to do that. And I'm sure I can remember you once telling me that, didn't you get to work with Little Walter?
Just one gig. I played guitar on one gig, but he went back to the States, and then somebody shot him or something. Yeah, he didn't have any band, so he came down from his room one time. I was in the lounge. And I said, I gotta go get a gig. I don't have any band, you know. He said, get your guitar. I go, okay. So I got my guitar and we drove to this place. And I had one of the semi-acoustic guitars, plugged it in, and it was just me and him. Somewhere in London. In fact, I think I mentioned in a book, it's because it mentions a book about Little Walter, and the guy mentions this particular gig, but you know, nobody knew who the hell I was, you know. Wow. So my name's not in there. But...
And that concludes this episode of In Conversation with Sir Van Morrison. Please do check our website out, lgradio.online, to find out when the next episode is on. Thanks for listening.